Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket live at the IPL final. And it's not a game that's going to be won by the barest of margins, I don't think, because the Mumbai Indians are looking very much on top for their fifth title. They just need about 20-odd to win against the Delhi Capitals with plenty of overs to spare and Rohit Sharma looking very dominant. I'm very pleased to say we've got Prakash Wakankar with us all the way from India. Do give us a bit of an overview of the tournament overall. I should just remind you, by the way, that this is Tuesday night, the final of the IPL. On Thursday night, we've got Phil Tufnell in the Virtual Cricket Club to answer your questions and to give us a bit of banter and also for you to win memorabilia. So don't forget to join us for that. worldsbestcricketclub.com. You can access our live show on Thursday night at 7 p.m. Prakash, though, you've been watching obviously a lot of the IPL. This match, as I said, is drawing to a rather anticlimactic conclusion, really. Capitals only making 156 in their 20 overs, which was probably about 20 or 30 short. And then they started so well, the Mumbai Indians, and really never left off, and now needing just a few to win, 20 to win from four overs. Delhi looked actually, as a team that never played in the final before, they looked as if they were at a bit of stage fright. Did you go along with that, Prakash?
Yes, Simon. I mean, you go back to the last game that Delhi played against Sunrisers Hyderabad 1. And here's just an amazing catch right now. Not that it's going to make a difference, but that's the end of Rohit Sharma. Caught down in the mid-wicket area, going for his favourite pull of the front foot off Nokia, and some consolation for the Delhi team. But you remember that the question asked, I think it was Marcus Stoinis who was asked the question, and he said, well, you know, Mumbai are a dominant team. It's time they had a bad day at office, and that's what we're hoping for. I think that said it all. The fact that Mumbai Indians have just been so dominant through this tournament, firepower with the bat, two great bowlers, a couple of good spinners. And really, I mean, when you think about a graphic that came up during this game as to who's been the best batsman for Mumbai Indians and did not feature Rohit Sharma, Karan Pollard or Hardik Pandya, then you know the depth of the Mumbai batting. They've really been absolutely a juggernaut in this tournament. And I think I've not seen them dominate a tournament like this all through the multiple seasons of the IPL. So they'll be deserved winners. Delhi, I think, stage fright, I don't know. Just got off to a bad start. I mean, they won the toss and you were hoping that they were going to come out and put up a good score. First ball, I think it just set the tone for the rest of the game, even though there were some heroics from Rishabh Pant and Shreyas Iyer.
Yeah, and the you were right about that. This great start, Trent Bolt and Jasprit Bumrah are a wonderful opening pair, aren't they? And they reduced the Delhi team to 20 odd for three early on. Disappointing performance actually by Shikhar Dhawan today. I had a big slog across the line and missed an off break, and he departed as well. So they must have felt a bit gloomy after that bad start. But you mentioned the two sort of unexpected stars of the Mumbai Indians side, and I suppose you're referring to Suryakumar Yadav and Ishan Kishan.
Absolutely right. I mean, spot on. These are two uncapped players for India, and they've both made a very big impact in the tournament. And there have been many others. So, you know, this IPL, like all IPLs, has thrown up some exciting talent. A couple of the boys have made it onto the plane to Australia. But the two that, you know, have really stood out for me are probably, you know, that some people may not even know their names. They wouldn't know if they watched the IPL. But there have been so many such young players. And that, I think, is the value of the IPL from a pure cricketing perspective for Indian cricket, that it continues to throw up such talent and just gives that much more bench strength to Ravi Shastri and the rest of the cricket administration.
Yes, I mean, it should be the lead to India dominating 50 over and 20 over cricket. We'll see, I suppose, when we play the World T20, which is scheduled for India this time next year, or just a bit before this time next year, October next year. Lovely four there, struck by Karan Pollard. Pollard has been an amazing success story as well. I mean, he's played something ridiculous like 400 or maybe even 500 T20 matches, and he's still going so well. I mean, he's just bunted Nofke there back over mid-off, simple shot over mid-off for four to take them to within 18 of their target. And his strike rate is nearly 200, and he's averaging 64, and he's just flicked another four there through mid-wicket. So you'd think of him as this sort of big, beefy slogger, and obviously he does hit the ball miles, but he's also playing some proper shots here.
He has, and I wonder, in fact, Simon, that the injury to Rohit Sharma and the few games that Pollard came out to lead Mumbai Indians, much like in the CPL, you saw a different kind of Mumbai outfit in terms of a little bit more of upfront aggression, more positive with field placements, bowling changes, a little more attacking. And I think he brought that added energy as if Mumbai needed any. And then Rohit Sharma has just come back, played a great knock, and just ensured that they are going to pick up what this will be their fifth title.
What a remarkable cricketer Rohit Sharma is. He's actually, which he's likely to pick up the trophy here, he's played in six winning teams, because he played one season
for Hyderabad.
And so he's had an incredible career. 339 T20s, just made his 39th IPL 50. He just makes run scoring in white ball cricket look ridiculously easy.
He does indeed. And I remember the final test that of Sachin Tendulkar's at the Wankhede Stadium. And amongst the many questions that were asked to him on the sidelines of that game was, who do you predict could break your record, Sachin? And he picked out two names. And those two names have gone on to dominate Indian cricket. Obviously, as you would guess, Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma. And mind you, Rohit's early career was one of those things that people talked, Pollard just dragged one onto his stumps, and Kaiso Rabada has just picked up a wicket. But he is livid, his Pollard, as he walks off, being bowled by Kaiso Rabada. But too little, too late for the Delhi Capitals, I'm afraid. But coming back to your question, I think there was a time when a lot of us were wondering if he was going to be a bit of a Yuvraj of the earlier part, not being able to live up to his talent. And then I think somewhere along the way, once he got his mind focused, lost a bit of weight, and after that he's just been an absolute sledgehammer at the top in white ball cricket for India.
Yeah, you think of the successful white ball players as being very muscular, you know, the sort of A.B. de Villiers and Andre Russell and Karan Pollard and people like that, Ben Stokes, who tries to muscle the ball everywhere. But actually, Rohit Sharma is a caresser of the ball, really, isn't he? I mean, he must be stronger than he looks. He doesn't look like someone who goes to the gym or anything. but he just hits the ball so sort of nonchalantly. I mean, even the third ball of the innings here, he came down the wicket to Ravi Ashwin, didn't really quite hit it, just sort of bunted it back over the bowler's head and straight for six. I mean, it didn't carry that far over the ropes. He doesn't really go in for sort of hitting the ball 110 metres, but in a way, you don't have to, do you? And I suppose he's also got that very calm, very almost sort of nonchalant, as I say, kind of personality, which I suppose in the heat of these kind of games is ideal.
Well, he is that kind of person as well. He's a bit laid back. Some might even call him lazy at times. Reminds me in a very strange sort of way of the lazy elegance that we all associated with David Garr, for example, if you take away the left and right combination or comparison. Rohit Sharma often is seen as if he's not really putting in an effort. He's a great timer of a cricket ball. And in some ways, I think the other batsman that comes to my mind is Kane Williamson. Never looks to hit the ball very hard, can bat in any situation. Rohit Sharma, very similar, very controlled. And yet, when required, he is absolutely ruthless with the bowling. And today, for me, the one particular thing with Rohit was, when he was defending test match style. And when he was putting the bat ball away, man, he was just absolutely finding the gaps, piercing them.
Yeah, so ruthless in a way, isn't
it? Precisely where he wanted. Absolutely ruthless.
There's a nice, neat shot by Ishan Kishan, who was the other batsman that you picked out. There's a couple of interesting bits of cricket, actually. Ishan Kishan got the 30th six of his IPL this year, so he's headed the six count. But then a little deft shot there for four down to third man. And I thought of the other young Indian batsman that we mentioned, Yadav as well, Suryakumar Yadav. Very interesting, sort of unselfish bit of cricket earlier on. A very smart bit of cricket when there was a mix-up between him and Rohit Sharma, and he sacrificed himself, knowing that Rohit was the man who would probably lead the Mumbai Indians to victory, or certainly had the ability to get them close. And so he just gave himself up, Suryakumar Yadav. A very, very very sporting and very smart bit of cricket, that.
Indeed it was. And this is where, you know, we often talk about cricket as a game that builds character. And when you see incidents like this, Simon, you do recognize that these are the moments where the opportunity or the ability or the temperament or the commitment, whatever word you want to use, of that individual comes to the fore, shows how quickly you need to assess the situation. And then remembering that it's a team game, you let the man who's been there longer, is looking in better nick, you know, stay on, and you sacrifice yourself, even though your first two scoring shots have been a four and a six. That is tremendous by Suryakumar Yadav.
How about the tournament overall, as we just see Mumbai there just easing towards their victory now, just four to win with two overs remaining and plenty of wickets in hand. Some IPLs have been typified by controversy, like the Mankadding last year by Ravi Ashwin, and sometimes there's been confrontations with players. I remember Dhoni actually last year getting on the field and complaining about the umpiring, and of course even in the final last year there was a controversy over a ball that might have been called a no ball, and there was a lot of complaints about the umpiring. What about this year? Has it been fairly eventless, would you say?
I think in that sense it has, hasn't it? I think it's been played, maybe it's got to do something with the fact that it's been played with this whole global pandemic. People just been grateful to be able to get out on the park and play, provide some entertainment for viewers around the world, and particularly here in India. I think it's been played in very good fashion, and I think in good spirit as well. Don't really recall any nasty incidents other than the momentary sort of comment here or there. And I think it's been an IPL that has sort of provided a huge amount of solace, I think, certainly to Indian viewers. I was telling someone the other day that while there is obviously no scientific basis for it, the fact that India's COVID counts have gone down to the lowest ever during the course of this IPL, maybe just as a result of the fact that people have stayed home every evening and watched this sort of festival of cricket as Mumbai come up to just one run now required, scores are even, and Ishan Kishan is 33, Hardik is 3. They're dancing in the aisles. Those fortunate people who've gotten there, enjoying the sights of seeing their home team win.
Mrs. Ambani is clapping away, isn't she?
Yes,
Mukesh's
Mrs.
wife.
Ambani, yes.
The richest man in India's Akash. Wife. I bet she's happy.
Yes. She certainly would be. And deservedly so, one has to say, Simon. I mean, Delhi have done well. They've come up to... Oh, he's gone! Hardik Pandya looking to, to pull one away. And he's actually been caught at short mid-wicket. And that means they'll have to get the next man in to get that winning run. Smiles all around. Hardik Pandya walking away with a big grin on his face. But that's the strange part of it. Not able to put it away. Rahane taking a good catch, running away to his right. So, leaving it now to wonder whether it's going to be Ishan Kishan, but he's at the non-striker's end. So, we'll have to wait and see. There's still three deliveries to go in the 19th over. Mumbai doing it without really breaking into a sweat, I think.
It's been a great tournament, hasn't it? Because, you know, despite the crowds, they've managed to create the buzz on the field with the artificial crowd noise and the way it's been sort of filmed generally. And also, there've been a lot of close finishes. I mean, perhaps less so latterly, but early on in the tournament, there was one weekend where there was three super overs in
right.
in two games, and lots of, you know, last over finishes, and which shows in a way that the auction and the salary cap and the way the draft works, sort of throwing all the players into the pot every couple of years or so, does actually work. It gives everybody a chance. And there was a stage in this tournament, wasn't there, about 10 days ago, where seven of the eight teams could still win it with only
That's
a week
right.
to go. This
That's
is
right.
going to be probably the last ball. It's
and
in fact dug
are.
Out. And there's the winning runs for Mumbai Indians. Krunal Pandya actually scoring the winning run there with Ishan Kishan not out 33 at the other end from 19 balls. A really impressive performance by him and predictable celebrations for the Mumbai Indians. And actually, it's been and disappointment, of course, for Delhi, who was their first appearance in the final and they failed. But, I mean, actually, I suppose in a way, you mentioned about the effect it might have had on the pandemic, the fact that it's kept people at home. This is the perfect final for India, really, isn't it? Because it arguably the two biggest cities contesting the final. So a very large population involved in this game.
Oh, absolutely. Most certainly. And I think the other aspect of this, of course, is that the losing captain is a Mumbai boy. While he's leading the Delhi Capitals, Shreyas Iyer, of course, plays for Mumbai in the Ranji Trophy. And so in that sense, it's a celebration of cricket. Someone has to lose. I think Delhi would have liked to make it a much closer game if they could. But the fact that after all these years of huge disappointment, making the playoffs last year and this year progressing one step further, I think Delhi finally might be getting their act together. And maybe next year will be their year. Who knows?
What about off the field, TV coverage, audience figures, you know, kind of sponsors, feedback and exploitation and so on. And obviously social media, I guess, has been probably bigger than ever, has it?
Oh, through the roof. And without question, the highest viewership numbers that the IPL has ever had. And IPL has always been top of the pops. Advertising revenues, from what I've heard, unofficially, right up there. In fact, I think for the last, for the playoffs, the spots on the television coverage here in India were probably as high as ever. So no economic impact there, clearly showing that the viewership numbers attracted all the advertisers. You had all the big brands part of it in any case. And I think from that perspective, it's been an economic success. But you did ask me at some point, Simon, to talk about a couple of guys who sort of caught my eye, if you will. And I've picked two of them, a batsman and a bit of an all-rounder. Devdutt Padikkal, the left-handed opening batsman, playing his first IPL tournament, plays for Karnataka and, of course, plays for the RCB. What an amazing talent. 473 runs, 550s. Really think he's one for the future. And I think as India look to sort of settle into an opening pair in the years to come, he will have a definite role to play. I don't know what you thought of him, but I was very, very impressed with Devdutt Padikkal.
Yeah. I didn't actually see that much of him, in fact. And who was your other one?
The other one for me is Rahul Tewatia, the right arm Rajasthan spinner Royals. Yeah. For Royals.
Mm.
Again, you know, these are unsung heroes. These are people who probably, I mean, Devdutt would probably have a chance at playing India. I don't think Tewatia is going to make it to the Indian jersey ever. But these have been sort of the unsung heroes of the team. In the Royals side, with all those marquee stars, Tewatia is the one who's got them close in a couple, won them a couple. And I think just the spirit with which these boys have played, and there have been several others, but if you had to pick two, for me, those would be the two who've made a big impact for themselves and their teams.
And I should think, although Tewatia is not the youngest now, is he? But it would have totally transformed their lives as well, in the same way as, the Pathan family were total rags to riches. You know, they used to live, I think they used to live in virtually, if not in the mosque, then very close to the mosque. And the only place they could play cricket when they were kids was in a little bit of the mosque somewhere. And now they were able to buy their parents a beautiful house 5 years later after their success in the IPL. And I suppose the same would apply to somebody like Rahul Tewatia.
Oh, it absolutely would. And it's a case where, you know, you think about Padikkal, again, coming from very humble backgrounds, as did Natarajan, as did Tejaswi Yadav, who actually used to sleep on a bench in Mumbai. So these are tremendous opportunities. And if you just move away from the cricket in India for a moment, it actually tells you again how sport can dramatically alter the social fabric of countries, families, individuals, whatever it may be. And think about it. It's not just these boys who've come from very humble backgrounds. I forget now, but the millions of dollars that someone like Pat Cummins got for effectively bowling four overs in a game is again, an economic multiplier that goes into various parts of the world. And of course, the individuals and their families benefit immensely. And if those performances can get them into international colours, then that's the ultimate icing on the cake, I suppose.
There was that story about the young player for Rajasthan Royals, the left-hander who dominated the under-19 World Cup. And he only played a couple of games for the Royals opening the batting, but he sort of basically lived on a park, not a park bench, but he lived in the groundsman's hut, or he sort of slept in the groundsman's hut quite a lot of the time when he was a teenager in Mumbai at the Maidan there. So again, it's beautiful stories, actually, that you could barely make up the rags to riches. I suppose we should just consider, as Rohit Sharma waits for the presentation of the trophy, we should just consider how the England players have done. There was an interesting stat, actually, in the Sunday Times this week about the England involvement in the IPL and how, in the first year, that there was only one player from England playing in the 2008 IPL. This year, there have been 10. And they've made 93 appearances between them. So very much an English influence on this IPL, though none featuring in this final. And Owen Morgan, 418 runs, took over the captaincy of the Kolkata Knight Riders, did very well. Ben Stokes made the only century by an overseas player, though, of course, in the end, the Royals finished bottom, though only by one loss or one win compared to some of the others. I mean, it wasn't like they were rock bottom. There was a lot of teams on similar numbers of points. Johnny Bairstow, 345 runs. Jofra Archer, probably one of the outstanding bowlers of the tournament, 20 wickets at an amazing economy of 6.55. And actually, Sam Curran impressed as well. Chennai Super Kings disappointing and sort of dad's army in a way, but Sam Curran gave them some vitality. 13 wickets and 186 runs, and just had an impact with bat and ball, which will bode well for England in the future.
Oh, definitely. And you add Chris Jordan and who's the other batsman? Banton, is it?
Tom Banton didn't play much, did he?
A couple of games, I think. But again, made an impact. And I think, you know, this is the point, isn't it, Simon, that tournaments like this give different conditions, different environments, different competitiveness to players, build their edge, and actually they take that back to their national teams when they go out and play there. And I think to that extent, the IPL gains, but also the national teams gain. I mean, Owen Morgan, such an outstanding cricketer. I think the fact that he was able to lead the team in the latter part for KKR. Again, a terrific, terrific performance. Ben Stokes came in late, took a couple of games to settle down, but we all know what he was capable of, and he showed. And Jofra Archer, why? My goodness. I mean, phenomenal. So we've had some great quick bowlers. The wickets in Dubai, a lot of us were very worried that towards the latter half of the tournament, they would get really low and slow. But they've lasted well. I think great credit to the groundsmen there to have prepared wickets, which have by and large been good. Maybe the Sharjah wicket was a little bit iffy towards the end. But other than that, I think it's been a terrific tournament. Kudos to the folks who've pulled it off. And I'm wondering what literally millions are going to do tomorrow evening at 7:30 in India.
Yes, I can see that. That's obviously an issue. They'll find a sort of soap or something to replace what is effectively a sporting soap opera, really. You're right to mention and highlight the UAE, because it's become a sort of sporting bubble, hasn't it, that it is able to pull off these. So this is the second time they've had the IPL in this environment, and they do it very well, even without the crowds. What do you think are the prospects for the next IPL being back in India, which will be sort of March, April time? How's it looking? You say that infection rates are down. The news of the vaccine obviously has excited us here in the UK. What about the prospects for India and hosting England in February, March, and the IPL as well?
Well, I mean, look, difficult to predict, isn't it? I mean, you've got second and third waves happening in different parts of the world, lockdowns, re-lockdowns, and so on and so forth. I think for us, the big test, we're getting into Diwali tomorrow, which, as you know, is this big, big celebration and big festival, a la what Christmas would be for the West. I think a lot of it is going to depend on how we come out of that as a nation, because that's going to be one time where, in spite of all the sort of caution about continuing to maintain distancing and so on and so forth, inevitably in a festive mood, there's going to be that risk of additional transmission. Now, it depends whose reports you believe, but if indeed the herd immunity piece has really kicked in as much as people say it has, one can only hope for a country the size of India that we keep this in check. If it happens, I think we will start getting the sporting events. Just last week, the government has now opened up sporting arenas, so people are out there, except for cinema halls and swimming. I think everything else is now open and available. So slowly, the lockdown is easing, and if we can prevent a major resurgence, I see no reason why we can't get England here and, of course, continue with the rest of the cricketing season. But fingers crossed is all one can say at this point, I suppose.
Actually, you say that you wonder what the Indian public are going to do tomorrow night. Well, that's obviously, you've got your festival first, and then the Indian players are heading off to Australia, and without much ado, they'll be starting a one-day series and a test series over there. I think there's something like 33 days cricket in 44 days or something mad.
That's right.
You haven't got much time to wait till some more cricket. And the only trouble is going to be, I suppose, the time difference.
I was about to say that it's going to be very early in the morning, though I think the white ball cricket will be played later in the day, so we'll probably be still able to get the bulk of it. And of course, the startling news, and I say startling in inverted commas, that Virat Kohli is going to miss the second, third and fourth test match. It's completely understandable that he will want to come back for the birth of his first child. But to now say that I will go and not return for the rest of the series is quite remarkable. I don't know what you think about it or what our listeners will make of it, because many people, Joe Root most recently and several others, have understandably taken a break, gone back, been with the family, and then post the delivery have, if it's possible, come back and resumed national duty. Mm. Virat's made it very clear, and the BCCI have given him the permission if that was ever required. So India will have a different captain for the second, third and fourth test.
And who will that be?
Well, I mean, if Ajinkya Rahane is the vice captain, so technically him, but now that Rohit Sharma has been back included in the squad, I wonder, it'll all depend, I suppose, on how Rahane goes. If he has a place in the side, he'll probably be the captain. But if for any reason he's not in the playing 11, then maybe Rohit gets his chance.
And of course, Rohit, having won another IPL or brandish the trophy, as he's about to do in a couple of minutes' time. It's another little feather in his cap and probably gives him a bit more captaincy credibility than Rahane, maybe. Yeah, I sort of understand why these players are doing it. I suppose if he was at home when the birth happened, you could it could be fairly easy just to miss a test match, say. But in the unusual circumstances that we're in at the moment, where you've got to isolate again when you travel and so on, I mean, it is going to be quite tricky, isn't it? So I suppose he had to make a firm decision. He's also been someone who's been quite outspoken, Kohli, in saying there is too much cricket going on, and the Indians have won in Australia now, so they've conquered that land, their last tour, so maybe he thinks it's less important than the birth of a child, which, you know, it is, basically.
Oh, without question. I mean, I don't think anybody can grudge any sportsman, or any individual for that matter, wanting to be with the family for a new arrival, especially the first child, and so we wish him and Anushka well, of course, I'm sure, as that day arrives. But before that, there's got to be some serious cricket. And if you look at what's going on in the Sheffield Shield, I just got some tweets from Peter LaLaura, our friend, talking about this young boy who's got two back-to-back double hundreds. I'm not sure how I pronounce his name, so I won't attempt.
Yeah, it's Will Pukowski, the batsman you're talking about, who I think I'm right in saying took a break from the game last year for stress.
Yes,
and stress. Well, that's helped. Clearly, it hasn't particularly helped Glenn Maxwell, who did the same thing last year. He was a bit disappointing in the IPL this time, actually. But what a talent he is. And yeah, I mean, Will Pukowski, if he makes it into the Australian team, that just gives them another batting star to align with Marnus Labuschagne, who of course sort of came from nowhere last year, as well as Steve Smith and all the other guys. So maybe he could be piloted into open, because that's where they're with Warner. They didn't really ever find a permanent replacement a permanent partner for David Warner. So maybe he'll slot in up there.
Absolutely. And you've been talking about English presence in the IPL. I, for one, have to say that I thoroughly enjoyed Swanee in the Star Studios for everything that he's done. He's been absolute live wire, if you will. And today he made this very interesting comment. I don't know if you heard it. Jayant Yadav, the off spinner who was brought in for the game today, I think it might have been his first game this series in the IPL, and got the wicket of Shikhar Dhawan. And he made this very interesting tongue-in-cheek classical Swanee comment, saying if they had to bring in someone, then it was great that they brought in a giant, which I thought was particularly clever.
Actually, but I wonder what had happened to Swanee, because we haven't heard much of him over here. So he's obviously being embedded in a studio in Mumbai all this time.
Yes, he's been regaling us with all his all his antics and all his smart comments.
Okay.
We've enjoyed having him
around. He'll have a big following now then. He probably can probably go move to India for a while and enjoy a renaissance, a second or third wind there.
Sort of land himself a Bollywood role, who knows?
Quite. Well, listen, it's been great chatting to you, Prakash, again. One other thought, the women's IPL, as it was, or the little challenge, the three-way, those matches, did they go down well?
Very well, I must say. I'm very, very impressed with the kind of viewership that they got. Yesterday's mini final, if you want to call it that, attracted a fair amount of viewership. And also, I think for me, what is very heartening, Simon, is just to see that today I heard, read in fact, a tweet that Amazon Prime have signed a deal, I don't know for how much, with New Zealand for all cricket games in New Zealand, all international cricket in New Zealand, till 2025, to be streamed live on Amazon around the world. Amazon Prime.
Yes, well, they did a deal with a streaming service last year as well. I think this is a sort of an extra ingredient. And it's the way it's going to go, because streaming actually in the summer in England, because of the pandemic as well, people not able to get to games, was very successful. The Bob Willis Trophy final was streamed and followed by, I think, nearly a million people overall. And obviously in somewhere like India, if streaming comes on there, well, you already have your digital service Hotstar, don't you? So with all the smartphones and everything, I mean, it's it's the way forward. It's great for the consumer, provided they don't have to pay a huge amount extra for it. It's great for the spectator and the game.
Just pay normal data, which is very, very cheap, as you know, in India. So I think that's great again for the women's game. I honestly believe that we should be seeing, if not this coming year in 21-22, we should be seeing a 6-7 team women's equivalent of the IPL for sure. I think the BCCI seem committed to it. I think the girls have done very well. And I don't know if you picked up that one little clip, which is doing the rounds on social media, of Chantam, the Thai captain, making that absolutely unbelievable stop, running back from short third man down to the boundary, and sort of doing a regular U-shaped dive, if you can picture that. And while being in the air over the boundary, pushing the ball back in to save, I have never seen a male cricketer do or attempt anything remotely like that. And it just shows the intensity with which the girls have played their cricket. And I think that augurs well for women's cricket around the world as well.
Yeah, it does. And that's a good one for YouTube. And also, so is the Nicholas Pooran piece of fielding over the boundary. I'll post that on my social media actually tonight, because he dived and took an incredible catch over the boundary and then sort of flicked it under his body before landing on the ground, saving probably four runs, I suppose, because it would have been a six, obviously. And there was sadly no one there to catch it for his return or his flick. But that was the most extreme. I mean, it's fielding in the IPL and in T20 is becoming a sort of combination of sport and circus, almost acrobatics. It's incredible.
It is absolutely. So it is bringing new skills to the game.
And it was actually the man on screen at the moment, Karan Pollard, sort of began that really with some of the early fielding catches that he did on the boundary, where he'd, you know, take one over the line and then flick it back to himself lots of times. Remember a diving catch, all those sort of amazing exploits, one-handed catches stretching back on the boundary rope and so on. So it's been a stunning exhibition of all the skills of cricket, this particular IPL. And Mumbai Indians are the champions for, as Prakash Wakanka said, the fifth time in the 12 or 13 seasons that we've had. So they really are the kings of the IPL. Prakash, thank you very much for your time. We'll hope to speak to you again soon. And I'll just remind you that we have Phil Tufnell in the Virtual Cricket Club this Thursday night, 7 p.m. If you go to worldsbestcricketclub.com, you'll find us there. It's all in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. It's £6 to submit your entry and join the club. But that is for 4 live events per month. And most of the proceeds go to the Professional Cricketers Trust. And I should also mention, by the way, thank you to Beer 52 for supporting this podcast. And the beers that they're providing, the craft beers they're providing, I had one the other night, Vocation, which was this flavour of California and New Zealand mixed together. It really was amber nectar. And I'm going to try another one on Thursday night. You can get a free case of 8 beers from Beer 52, craft beers from all over the world, if you go to beer52.com/cricket, and you only have to pay £5.95 and you get a free case of 8 beers to try. We want to try some of those on Thursday night. So if some of you get that lined up, we can share our tasting notes. Okay, Prakash, thank you very much for your time again. Mumbai Indians, champions of the IPL 13. Hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.